Law Focus Podcast. Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Good evening, ViFM listener. It has just gone 7 p.m. on this last week of Women's Month, and you're listening to Law Focus with me, Millicent Ntiveni, and Tebo Mohapi on ViFM 88.1. You can look forward to this evening's topic as we speak to the Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association, FITA, on their persistence in continuing with a legal battle against government, even though the tobacco ban has been lifted.
Good evening to you all, and if you've just joined us, welcome to the show. As we close the month of August tonight, we'll be looking at whether businesses have a case for suing the government for loss of damages due to the pandemic. We'll be speaking to Nontantla Gobile, who's an attorney, and she'll be giving us a legal expertise on the matter. And that's what we can all look forward to tonight. But of course, we can't continue without first bringing you our legal stories of the week. Here are our legal hotspots.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week is Legal Hotspots.
And indeed, with our first legal hotspot for the evening, virtual cases test the boundaries. Okay, what is that all about? The courts around the world are trying to figure out which technologies can be implemented to keep the wheels of justice turning in these increasingly uncertain times. So according to The Legal Brief, an online legal publication, virtual cases are a burning issue in countries like South Africa, where there is a massive backlog of cases following months of lockdown due to the novel coronavirus. The publication states that the pandemic has left regional and district courts in the country saddled with more than 60,000 case backlog at the end of June. This as the courts handled a minimum number of trials.
Now, moving on to the corruption scandal, DECO made 800% profit, the court reveals. A politically connected operator named in the personal protective equipment scandal besetting the Gauteng Health Department made an 800% profit in the COVID-19 PPE that he sold to the government. Now, according to the Sunday Times, court papers name Thandisizwe DECO, a family friend of the Gauteng MEC Bandile Masuka, and also a husband to Kusela DECO, who is the president's spokesperson, in a detailed claim laid out by the Special Investigative Unit, the SIU. Among the SIU's claims is that an extraordinary markup was made by DECO's proxy company, including buying 1 million medical disposal bags from a supplier for 75 cents each, and selling them to the health department for 7 rand apiece.
And as we continue with our legal hotspots, we conclude with the 4 billion rand that has been extended to the university 2020 academic year. Taxpayers are expected to fork out more than 4 billion rand for the university academic year to be extended by early 2021 due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The Mercury has reported that this was revealed by the Higher Education Minister, Bladen Zimande. He allegedly said 390 million rand was needed for technical, vocational and education training, that is the TVET colleges, while 4.1 billion rand will be for universities. Zimande was responding to questions from DAMP Belinda Bozoli, who asked for the breakdown in the 5 billion rand cut of funding in the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, that is NSFAS, and also what would not be funded by the bursary scheme.
Rounding up all the top stories of the week is Legal Hotspots. Law Focus, handing you your rights.
The Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association, FITA, will be persisting with its legal action despite President Cyril Ramaphosa's announcement to lift the tobacco ban after South Africa moved to level 2 lockdown last week. The association will proceed with its legal fight against the government for banning the sale and distribution of tobacco products for 5 months under level 5 to 3 of lockdown.
The President of the Republic extended the national state of disaster to the 15th of September. The socioeconomic restrictions have been lifted and almost all economic activities have resumed. The sale of tobacco products is now permitted after its ban when the country introduced lockdown on the 27th of March. The government at the time argued that the ban was to protect the health of South Africans during the pandemic and cigarette producers failed to convince the country's courts that the sale of tobacco was a necessity. And I joined by Snenta Ntamguni, chairperson of the Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association, also known as FITA. Welcome, Snenta Ntamguni, to Law Focus. Now, first things first, it's very good to have you here, and we appreciate your time. But can you give us an idea why continue with the legal battle against government, even though, in effect, the ban has been lifted?
No, of course, we accept that the ban's been lifted, but one has to take thorough consideration to the fact that the President and the Minister of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs both stated when they cautioned the nation about their behavior, now that the restrictions have further been lifted, that, you know, we are likely to see an increase in infections, and that may necessitate us shifting back to levels 3, 4, or 5 of the lockdown period, dependent on the rate of infections. And of course, that could then lead to a ban on the sale of cigarettes being reinstated. And that is what we, in essence, are going to try and challenge in as far as our court application, which is now in the Supreme Court, before the Supreme Court of Appeal. And we're stating, as we have always maintained, that the ban on the sale of cigarettes should not have been in place even under lockdown level 5. When it was implemented.
So it's not moot, in your opinion?
No, definitely not. And I mean, beyond that, even though some may consider some of the arguments academic, I think it's a matter of public interest, and there are a number of issues that need clarity in relation to the interpretation of the Disaster Management Act, particularly in relation to the interpretation of the word necessary. When we have submitted that measures implemented by the Minister in terms of the Disaster Management Act need to be strictly necessary, as was ruled on by a constitutional court judgment in the PECO matter, whereas the current full bench ruling, which dismissed our application, found that it was too rigid to expect of a minister to implement measures which were strictly necessary, and it would be holding the minister to a too high of a threshold. So we are not in agreement with that, and we feel that there's obviously a conflict between two judgments in relation to the Disaster Management Act and states of disaster. So, of course, we want, you know, some sort of clarity from the upper courts in relation to these kinds of issues.
Okay. And well, my understanding then is that you are hoping that the current lifting of the tobacco ban will not be temporary, even if, you know, we go back to a higher level of restrictions of the lockdown. You want to continue that to ensure that the tobacco products continue being available on the market. Now, with that said, what is different in your argument compared to what you have been arguing all along? Is there any difference that you have added to the legal arguments?
No, there's no difference. I mean, our arguments in as far as the appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal were in a few weeks prior to the President announcing that we would be lifting the ban on the sale of cigarettes. So there couldn't have been any alteration. And in fact, even the judgment came the day before the President made the announcement that the ban on the sale of cigarettes would be lifted. So we are confident that the merits of our case are very strong, and the ban was definitely irrational in our view. And further, the Minister acted beyond her powers by implementing a ban of this nature, as the Disaster Management Act does not empower her to enact such a ban. Further, let's look at the international standard. The fact that we are currently the only, up until yesterday, we were the only country that had a ban on the sale of cigarettes during the coronavirus pandemic. So there are really many, many arguments that we raise. In fact, we relied on 10 grounds in our application to the Supreme Court of Appeal challenging the ban on the sale of cigarettes and tobacco products during the lockdown period.
And are you only asking for recourse in the sense that the regulations should not be so restrictive for tobacco sales? Or is there something else that you're looking for, like maybe perhaps suing for loss of income or non-performance, those kind of things, kind of like what the alcohol license traders were trying to do?
Look, we get asked that question quite frequently, but no, at this stage, we are not suing for any damages. We are focused solely on ensuring that the ban on the sale of cigarettes is not reinstated under any lockdown level. So, I mean, we saw with the alcohol ban, for instance, that was reinstated, and that really caused further damage to that particular industry. So, no, we're just trying to ensure that, you know, we don't find ourselves again in the same position that we're in for the last 5 months, wherein there was no activity within our industry, and the damages there are felt right across the industry's value chain. And it's quite concerning. We still don't know how we're going to come out of the current situation that we find ourselves under, because, of course, we know that illicit traders have now taken over and people are buying cigarettes on the black market. And, I mean, all I hear on radio now is that people are really happy about the fact that they now know that there are cheaper cigarettes available for them, and they don't know if they're going to now pay the hefty prices that the legitimate players in the industry sell their cigarettes for.
Well, listen, as a smoker, I can tell you the quality, I've heard the quality of those cheaper cigarettes is really not something to write home about. But anyway, moving on. One of the things that you rely on in your argument is the interpretation of the word necessary. The case that you mentioned, I believe, relates to a localized disaster in East Rand. And this one is a national disaster, etc. Okay. Mm. So there's a lot made about that distinction that, you know, if it's localized, maybe you can raise the threshold. If it's a big, you know, national disaster, perhaps the threshold would be too high, which is basically the ruling of the Pretoria Court, more or less. Is that not actually quite an important distinction, that where it's localized, perhaps the threshold should not be as high as where, or should be higher than where it is not, you know, where it's a more general type of consideration?
I hear what you're saying. And again, I mean, this is why I think it's crucial that we proceed with this court application, because what happens, for instance, where you have in Gauteng, for instance, a situation like what we are told was happening in Wuhan, China, where it's rampant and beyond even what we've seen nationally as a country, are you then going to still apply those same sort of lesser stringent tests in relation to the word necessary by saying, but it's only in Gauteng, you know? So that's where I think we need clarity in as far as the interpretation of the Disaster Management Act. Because, I mean, you can see it happening that on some occasions, a local state of disaster may be more serious than a national one. So I think we need to have a test that is more sort of exposed to the current situation that we're under, and also the fact that, you know, we now know what a bigger range of states of disasters than what was prevalent at the time of PECO and perhaps now with the COVID-19 virus. So I think it's only going to help develop our law. And I mean, we can argue this until we're both blue in the face, but I think it's really important for our jurisprudence that this matter really gets taken all the way to the highest courts for further development of our legal precedent.
Mm. And why did you believe, though, that the cigarettes should really not have never been prohibited under any of the lockdown levels? What are your, you know, arguments, and are they health related at all?
Look, I mean, one of the arguments that we put forward, I mean, very early on, after we went into lockdown, there were a number of studies which were conducted by a number of independent institutions worldwide. Because, of course, we know that other countries had gone into lockdown way before us. And all these studies had shown, and in line with the fact that all these countries have not banned smoking, that there has not been an established link shown between smoking of cigarettes and other tobacco products and more severe cases of COVID-19. In fact, in countries such as China, France, and other parts of Europe where there are traditionally high percentages of adult smokers, the studies then, the empirical data which was relied upon, showed that there was actually a very low prevalence severe cases of COVID-19 among smokers. I mean, the Wuhan study, for instance, was looked at by a doctor called Dr. Fasalinos, who did the only peer-reviewed study worldwide on the effects of smoking and COVID-19. And he showed, he was even actually interviewed on a number of South African TV stations. And he stated that he does not understand why government has imposed a ban on smoking. And in actual fact, it's potentially going to cause more harm than do good, in that, of course, there's, nicotine, we know, is an addictive substance. And the people that rely on nicotine, once you withdraw that substance without some sort of intervention when they are slowly taken off that substance, you're going to create a number of psychological and physical issues for them. And one of those is, of course, lowering their immune system. So it was not in line, as a matter of fact, with medical literature at the time. And I think, I mean, it's borne out by our court papers and the court papers of many others who have challenged the government ban on the sale of cigarettes. Further, we deal with the international standard and the fact that, again, at the time, I think it was only South Africa and Botswana that had banned the sale of cigarettes. And yet other countries who had successfully treated prevented the spread of the virus did not see a need to ban the sale of cigarettes. So, you know, it was why we challenged the rationality of government's decision. And of course, we even attached reports from psychiatrists and other health practitioners which showed the impact that banning the sale of cigarettes would have. And of course, the fact that government didn't also look at less, invasive means prior to implementing a complete ban. And I mean, we know that psychiatric literature is littered with commentary on why smokers should never go cold turkey. In fact, when the ban was implemented, we had a lot of emails and correspondence from rehabilitation facilities for both people with physical disabilities and those who are recovering from drug addiction. And these facilities were saying to us that people that are recovering from drug addiction often use the smoking of cigarettes as a sort of midway between, you know, them stopping whatever substances they were addicted to and going completely cold turkey, because that obviously comes with its own health risks. And the same way that some people with physical disabilities, we're told, also use smoking as a coping mechanism. So, you know, in as much as people sometimes see smoking as a taboo sort of addiction, some people actually rely on it as a coping mechanism, and we have literature that backs that up.
Well, what I didn't know is that the immune system can be impacted if you abruptly decide to quit. I think that's very interesting. But then what if the people whom you are fighting for actually, well, some of them, let me say, don't go back to their normal original brand of cigarettes and continue with the illicit substances that they've been getting all along? What then for you as Ika?
Well, that's the nature of the beast, unfortunately, and it's something that we try to warn government against, because ultimately, not only the manufacturer loses, but the fiscus also loses, because we know, of course, that just from cigarette sales alone, government makes 15 billion rand per annum on the excise levy on there, and that's not including value-added tax, and then the corporate income tax paid by companies, personal income tax, skills development levies and so forth that are paid by tobacco industry role players. So, of course, that's something that's going to need cooperation from both industry and government in as far as how do we now go back to trying to restore the industry to its former position and ensuring that government gets what's due to it in as far as taxes.
I remember since I was about, I think when I was a teenager, tobacco was still allowed, tobacco producer was still allowed to advertise, etc. And so for the last 20 years or so, there's been a real push, I would say, against tobacco and so on. And gradually over time, some sectors, they've been pushed out, like advertising and sports and stuff like that. This latest 5 months of being totally, totally unable to operate, has that resulted in some sort of job bloodbath? I mean, what is the result from your sector of being completely prohibited from operating?
Look, I don't think, of course, you're going to see a shift just in the tobacco industry. I think most industries have experienced a maybe you could say some sort of wake-up call, and we're going to have to relook how we conduct business. I mean, I'm an attorney myself, besides being the chairperson of the Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association. And I mean, even our industry, the legal profession, we're going to have to relook how we do business. So the tobacco industry is not the only one that's subject to this. And I think there's going to be a lot of innovation that we're going to be seeing from tobacco players along the value chain. And I think we're going to have to change the way that we have been doing things, of course, in line with the Tobacco Products Control Act, which, as you say, prohibits a number of sort of tactics which one can employ to try and attract consumers. So, look, we're going to have to, it's going to be difficult, but I think as entrepreneurs, we're going to have to adapt and see what we can do to regain market share. And I know there's talks that some people have attracted market share as a result of the ban. So, look, it's a new sort of environment, and it's exciting, but also scary at the same time, because, you know, with the sort of strength of the illicit trade now, we're going to see that really people are going to have to change the way they have conducted things. And I think, again, there's a number of aspects that we have to look at in terms of how the tobacco industry traditionally has been, whereas we've seen maybe one or two manufacturers really dominating. I mean, I'm sure we've all been to petrol stations across the country, and you see this display unit there, and it's dominated by brands of one or two manufacturer, because those companies have been in existence for centuries, and they've been able to create or implement exclusivity agreements with retailers and so forth. And we're going to be approaching government to ensure that there's a level playing field for all, because as things currently stand in the tobacco industry as well, you and I will not be able to. It's very difficult, if not virtually impossible.
I'm sorry for interjecting you there. I was just saying, I guess COVID-19 has presented you with new opportunities as well.
Definitely. I mean, maybe this is the right platform to raise such an issue. I mean, the tobacco industry is relatively untransformed, like many other industries in South Africa, and we don't see many black faces playing in the space. So perhaps it's also an opportunity to push towards that agenda of transformation. You can't have an industry in a democratic South Africa, some 26 years into post-democratic South Africa, still being dominated by the same players that were dominating prior to us entering a democratic dispensation. So I think it's high time that we see a more transformative sort of industry as well.
I guess that aspect would really make for another interesting conversation. But so far, what is the latest regarding your case?
Our Supreme Court of Appeal case.
Yeah.
Look, of course, as I stated earlier on, we received judgment late on Friday, confirming that our application for leave to appeal had been granted. We were then told that the court wants to have the matter heard as a matter of urgency. So our understanding is that the matter will be in court before the end of September. We are currently awaiting further directives from the Supreme Court of Appeal prior to us, of course, notifying the public as to when exactly they can expect the matter to be heard. And course, another thing that I just may wish to add is that there's also been correspondence from our legal team to government's legal team with a view to potentially settling the disputes between the parties. I can't say too much at this stage because, discussions of settlement are normally without prejudice. So at this stage, we are possibly looking at seeing if we can find common ground with government on this issue. And we will keep the public updated as and when we go along.
Just out of interest, though, quickly, have none of the bigger brands, like those who have registered with FITA, absolutely not been involved at all in selling tobacco products illegally under the Disaster Management Act or the lockdown regulations? as far as
Well, like, I can't speak for everyone, but in as far as FITA members who are the majority of South African cigarette manufacturers, I can categorically state that they have not been involved in those shenanigans. If anything, I mean, we, as you will know, from alert level 4, South African cigarette manufacturers were permitted to manufacture for export purposes. Now, our exports were strictly controlled and monitored by officials of the South African Revenue Service. So from our side, I can categorically state that no, we were not involved in such shenanigans.
Okay.
So it's been quite a long journey and it's not quite over yet. I'd like to give you an opportunity just to express whatever it is you'd like to South Africans to know about your battle and perhaps the industry and your battle with the government at the moment. And is there anything in particular you'd like to highlight to us?
Look, South African tobacco industry, as we know traditionally, has always been dominated by multinational cigarette manufacturers. And as things currently stand, they've obviously dictated perception about brands and which ones are superior and which aren't. And again, we want, as representatives of independent South African cigarette manufacturers, a level playing field and fair treatment of all parties within the South African tobacco industry. And if there is to be engagement with government or any of its organs during the next few weeks, that all stakeholders within the tobacco industry value chain be you know, part of any consultative processes. We do not want to go back to the times of years gone by when only certain players within the tobacco industry were listened to. And we think that now is the correct time. I think in a way, the lockdown period has almost heralded the changing of times. And going forward as an industry, we would like a fair trading environment for all within the industry and for government to really create an environment where any South African who's got an entrepreneurial mind can partake in the industry if they wish to do so and if they have the capabilities to do so without, you know, challenges that many in the past, particularly the members of our organization, have faced as a result of the industry being dominated by foreign-owned monopolies.
Okay. By the way, Snantlandla, before we let you go, if you can just answer me this one question in less than a minute. Does your legal battle include e-cigarettes?
Look, yeah, our argument deals with cigarettes and tobacco-related products. In other words, every product which falls under the category of a tobacco product, which was banned during the lockdown period. So, yeah, it does definitely do so.
Okay, right. I'm sorted. Well, that was Nantlandla Mnguni, who is the chairperson of the Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association, speaking to us tonight about the intent of continuing with their court action against government, even though the cigarette ban has been lifted. Well, thank you so much, Nantlandla, for joining us on Law Focus tonight. Do keep well and all the best.
Law Focus, handing you your rights.
If you've just joined us, welcome to Law Focus. I'm Tab Mahap, and with me is the lovely Millicent Ndwenyi. Sadly, we're getting close to the end of the show now, and we're going to move to a part where we hear your unique various voices about the tobacco products ban, as well as the ban being lifted during level 2 lockdown. Here's what some of you had to say.
Support Ladi here. I'm actually quite glad that we moved to level 2 lockdown. And more in particular with the sale of, or rather the unbanning of tobacco, we can actually now generate good revenue for the country and not for the individuals that were, you know, gaining from the illicit trade of the, you know, cigarettes and other tobacco products. I would like to think that, you know, there isn't any scientific proof that cigarettes were actually terrible or bad for one's health, even though, yes, it does affect the respiratory system. But other than that, I don't really think there was any scientific proof for them to actually do put a ban on cigarettes. However, alcohol has seen that there is actually bad things that do happen when excessive alcohol is being consumed, and that has proved itself within a week of the reopening of or the unbanning of alcohol.
Hello, my name is Nonkululeko Ngwenya. I'm very happy that the restriction on the sale of cigarettes was lifted in lockdown level 2. I don't think the restriction on the sale of cigarettes prevented anyone from smoking in the first place. It just made people smoke poorer quality stuff at a higher price. But now that the ban's been lifted, we can buy our usual brands at regular prices. So I'm very pleased about that.
Hi, my name is Dagmar Wate. I'm actually kind of glad about the, when it comes to level 2, on the grounds that I can finally go see my daughter. This thing of not being able to cross the borders was a problem. So being able to be free to cross the border anytime I want to, that's quite nice. When it comes to the cigarette thing, well, I'm happy that it's been unbanned on the sense that some tax revenue, we can start collecting tax on it, so some money coming back. Pretty good, we lost some money, so pretty good that it's been unbanned, so we can make some money again as a country.
Hi, my name is Kenzie Mohapi, and with regards to the level 2 lockdown, I think South Africa's been through an interesting spell, as the rest of the world has, but we find ourselves in a unique position because we're a country that was going through a tough economic time prior to the lockdown. And as much as all these conditions were put in place to make sure that there's a slower spread of the virus, we can contain it a little bit better, we can treat it a little bit better, I think the government has done, to a degree, a fair job in that particular regard. I know there's some scandals that are happening around PPE at the moment, but regards to readiness, I think if we're going to be honest, they are able to take care of the mass needs. And that was part of the purpose of the lockdown. One of the things that was a big talking point in the lockdown, of course, was also the ban on liquor and tobacco being the longest one affected. I'm not a smoker, but with regards to the tobacco being unbanned, from an economic perspective, it's a huge part of our GDP, especially for a country right now that's going through the most, and where we have a contraction. In fact, at some point, we had a recession in the last year. Every cent that we can get, we need to get. We need to get people back into their jobs. We need to be able to get the economy flowing within and get interest back into the country. So it might be a vice for many, but it really is still a legal business that brings in billions of rands of revenue that we need for our healthcare, for our roads, for society. And so I think it was the right move.
Law Focus on Barfan 88.1, point of information.
Welcome back to Law Focus with Millicent Ngweni and Tepa Mohapi. If you just joined us, we're talking about the Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association's legal bill against the government over the tobacco product ban, even though it has been lifted just last week. With all the constantly changing lockdown regulations and now the country has moved to level 2 of the lockdown, there have been many businesses that have acquired huge losses during the 5 months period since the lockdown in March.
Now, before the introduction of the level 2 regulation lockdowns, we saw the Restaurant Association of South Africa planning to sue the government for damages. And now we're witnessing Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association's legal battle against government over the tobacco products ban, although, yes, it has now been lifted. They are continuing with their litigation. The repercussions of the lockdown have disadvantaged so many companies from various industries, where many are unable to make profits as they did before the COVID-19 pandemic. We're now joined by Nhlanhla Kobile, an attorney, who'll be giving us a legal opinion on the topic. Good evening, Nhlanhla. How are you?
Good evening, Tepo. Good, thank you. And thank you for having me.
You are very welcome to be here. We're happy, excited to have you. Thank you for coming through. Now, looking at the legal battle of FITA, you know, the Tobacco Association and government, what do you think of their decision to continue with the court action against the government, although for the time being, at least, the tobacco ban has been lifted?
Yeah, firstly, I think we all need to remember that South Africa is founded on the supremacy of the Constitution and the rule of law. And what that means is that the exercise of public law is regulated by the Constitution, and that the government cannot exercise any power beyond what it has been given by the Constitution. So then, with that being said, if anyone feels as though the lockdown regulation imposed by the government is in any way unconstitutional, then they have every right to approach the court. So in this particular case, if FITA feels as though the regulations were unconstitutional, then they are well within their rights to continue with their legal battle in court.
And with that said, then would you say that they have a strong case for the damages against government that they are seeking to obtain?
Okay, so just to look at the case, the FITA case, right? The challenge there was founded on the legality principle, in that banning cigarettes bears no rational relationship to curbing the spread of the virus. So the question that the courts will consider is whether the minister, in imposing the ban, was rational in doing so, and whether it actually served the purpose for the ban or the limitation. And as we know, the courts found that the government was actually rational in their decision, and they considered that the ban was fitting at the time to curb the spread of COVID-19. So, I mean, if they were to continue with this court case, they'd still have to prove that, you know, how was it that the government was not rational in banning the tobacco sales?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, you know, you are not directly involved in this matter. If looking from the outside, what would you think, or what would you say is likely to be the outcome of the case? Who scores?
You know, I think, I think the courts would still uphold the fact that the ban was not irrational, and the limitation was actually justifiable, because evidence was actually provided that people that smoke have a higher risk of transmitting the disease, and also the severity of them contracting the virus was more than a non-smoker. So, I mean, this is the evidence that was put forward. So if FITA were to continue with it, they'd have to give evidence that actually shows that that's actually not the case, and they'd have to prove to the court that the limitation of their right was somehow not justifiable and was not rational. So in my view, it would be a difficult one to prove, because as we know, under lockdown, a lot of rights were limited, you know, and all these rights were limited for the purpose of preserving people's lives. So that's the discussion that would take place in court.
Right.
Now, there's been a lot of legislation over the last 5 months. And, you know, literally every week something new is coming out or being repealed or being amended or whatever, or being overturned by the court or being confirmed. So a lot has been going on from a law point of view. Do you think so far, since the institution of the lockdown restrictions by the National Command Council, have they been good or accurate in using their laws? I mean, some of the regulations I couldn't understand myself personally. But, I mean, what's your take on the law and how it's been used so far?
You know, I think the government has been faced with a difficult task of trying to keep everyone safe and alive, as well as trying to preserve the economy. So I'd say they've done a good job, but obviously there are those instances where you question some of the regulations. For instance, we just remember what happened with the taxi situation, where taxis were allowed to operate at 100% capacity locally and 70% capacity within the provinces. And then on the other hand, you have restaurants that are not allowed to serve alcohol, and I mean, their businesses were limited in a great way. So, I mean, one would say if taxis are allowed to continue at 100% capacity, but on the other hand, in other industries, you're limiting them so much, where's the fairness in that? So I think in instances like that, I mean, it was a bit confusing for South Africa to say other industries are suffering way more than other industries. And I mean, in that
The one that really sticks out for me was the clothing one. You know, with the open shoes weren't allowed. And then, wow! I mean, how can we have that? I mean, it didn't last very long. It lasted a couple of weeks, that nonsense. But the fact that it was even there at some stage, that you couldn't buy open shoes, you know, open-toed shoes or whatever it was, I thought that was just going a little bit too far. But anyway, I suppose you've given your view on that one.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. And do you think that going forward, it's going to be applied better?
You know, it's a bit tricky to say, because I think the reopening or the phasing of the lockdown was actually a very good approach by the government, because as we remember the president saying that if we open up everything all at once, we face the risk of just regressing and going back to all those high numbers and cases. So I think the fact that we have five levels and we keep moving from one level to another, and they open up industries as the levels go up or down, I think is a good approach, because then they're able to monitor. And I mean, with every level, they see, okay, this is what we can do better. Okay, let's open here. This is what we can do differently, you know. So I think the phasing of it was actually a good approach by the government. And I mean, obviously, nothing is perfect. And I think because this is a new pandemic that we're faced with, the government is also kind of learning as they go along to see what works and what does not work.
Okay. I totally take your point. I think perhaps before we get to the last point, on the sale of cigarettes, there have been rumors, none has been proven yet. Peter says, according to what they know, no one who is part of the organization was selling illegally during the lockdown regulations. In the case that they were, Danta, do you think they should even have a right to have this recourse? And, you know, what would be the correct, I don't know, punishment is not the right word, but, you know, how should they be punished in some way, as an example, perhaps for other industries as well, because it would have been unfair for them to benefit by suing the government, even though they had been making a lot of money behind the scene, behind closed doors.
Okay, so if I'm understanding you correctly, you're talking about the black market.
Yeah.
With regards to the illicit cigarettes. Yeah, you know, it's a lot has been said about the thriving trade of illicit tobacco products as a result of the ban. And, you know, the black market has benefited a lot, because they had the chance of selling cigarettes at higher prices and they don't pay taxes. And on the other hand, you have organizations that follow the law but could not sell the tobacco because the lockdown, you know, and then you have the black market that's making a lot of money and not paying taxes. But, you know, the question still remains whether there's a rational connection between the ban and the means preferred, you know. So what we're saying is, what was this, if the limitation of the ban was rational, then the limitation was justifiable, then there's not much that can be done, because the lockdown is basically saying we're limiting a lot of rights, but we are justified in doing so because we're trying to preserve the rights of life, you know. And as much as the black market might have made a lot of money, but did it serve the purpose that it wanted to serve, in the sense that fewer people were smoking, and with that, were they able to save lives? And as they said that if more people were smoking, then it would mean that they'd have more people in hospitals going in, and they, you know, and then the health system already was under pressure, and they wouldn't be able to accommodate a large number of people. So they were just trying to curb and manage the situation. So if limiting that right was achieving its purpose, then it wouldn't really be a problem, because rights are actually allowed to be limited in terms of the Constitution in Section 36. The government is allowed to limit rights as long as it can show that it is justifiable and it's rational. And in doing so, it was able to achieve the purpose that it was trying to achieve. And in this particular case, the purpose was to save lives and curb the spread of the coronavirus.
Okay, yeah, because sure, money is a huge factor during the state of disaster. And but lastly, let's talk about the extension of the lockdown. We've seen it being extended a few times. How long could this possibly last for, according to law at least? How long can the state of national disaster be extended for?
Okay, so the president has said on multiple occasions that the virus will be with us for some time to come. So I think as long as we have new cases on a daily basis, we are most likely still going to be put under lockdown. But to say how long we'll be under lockdown will probably be determined by the number of new cases. Because if we're not faced with high numbers, then we're likely going to go to level one, and that will mean things going back to normality. But then again, if the numbers spike again, then the government is allowed to take us back to level two, level three, whatever the case may be.
Granted. Thank you very much. Well, that was Nhlanhla Gobine, who has just given us her legal analysis on this complex matter of the tobacco ban that existed for about 5 months now, and ETA taking the government to court. Let us know what you feel about, you know, this particular topic. Thank you so much, Nhlanhla, for sharing your analysis with us. We appreciate your time on the program tonight.
Okay, thank you, everyone.
All right, thank you.
Nhlanhla. Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VowFam 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer.
Thank you once again for choosing us every Tuesday night. Let's meet once more next week when we welcome a new season and month of September. It's been a long year. We promise a good show. We will be profiling another inspiring figure in the legal fraternity. Of course, we can't officially close the show without thanking our producer, Rufiwe Mekwa, our technical producer, Kutlwano Serame, and myself, Melissa Ndiveni, and Tepo Mohapi. Thank you for tuning into Law Focus, and have a good evening. Good night.
Law Focus on VowFam 88.1. Point of information. Law Focus Podcast.